1K Morris, and you are about to embark on the next Pioneer Knowledge Services Because You Need to Know, a digital resource for you to listen to folks share their experience and knowledge around the field of knowledge management and nonprofit work. If your company or organization would like to help us continue this mission and sponsor one of our shows, email bynTK@pioneer-ks.org.
Hello, my name is Aaron Ryman, and I am located in Atlanta, Georgia, more specifically a little further north in Marietta. I've been a geek since I was about 12 or so, got into computers. I've been doing web development since 1996, so I've got a lot of gray hair because of all the stuff I've done. But I've been doing web for 25 plus years. I have a business. I sold an agency a couple years back, but now I have a new agency called Clockwork WP. And the WP is obviously for WordPress. We do a lot of WordPress development, some of it for nonprofit, but majority is not. But I mean, probably about 20% is for nonprofits. It's something that's interesting around here. And I think one of the most historical things near me is Kennesaw Mountain, which is supposedly where they say they watched Sherman. He watched Atlanta burn. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I've always been told. I've done a decent amount of hiking in my life, and I've hiked that mountain when it's like 20 degrees outside and in the summertime, you know, so good times for me. If I were stranded on an island, the top three things that I would need, probably need a pocket knife, probably a lighter, and maybe a spear for fishing. I don't know. I watched Tom Hanks, you know, try to go through that stuff, and a spear seemed pretty handy. So
yeah, more so than a soccer ball, right?
Right. Wilson. I mean, Wilson, he was a good guy and all, but I mean, he didn't carry his own weight.
Not very helpful. I know. He's not very helpful. Yeah.
I wouldn't say that I have a mentor per se. I'm nothing that's formal, but when I was 16, I was working at my dad's bookstore, and a friend of the family reached out to me and said, "Hey, I heard you like computers." And I was like, "Yeah, I like computers." He said, "Why don't you swing by my office and I'll show you what we do." He basically taught me 3D animation on the Amiga, which is an old school computer that nobody knows anymore. Because of that, I went through high school having that job. And at the end of high school, I submitted all of the commercials and everything that I had worked on to Savannah College of Art and Design. And I actually won a scholarship with that. And he taught me how to do all the 3D animation stuff. He's a computer genius. You know, he kind of inspired me to be like him. So, and actually he just retired like about a month ago.
You want to give him a name?
Oh, I do. Dennis Ott. He worked at like Turner for probably 20 years or so doing technical stuff for them. He definitely led me down that path.
I think the challenge is people are so future minded and present to future minded that it's easily overlooked all the steps and things that were part of your past that put you where you are now. And a lot of that is people.
Absolutely.
Some of it's situation, but a lot of it's people. And to have somebody see a glimmer or an interest and say, "Hey, you know," and pull you aside, just like your story, that is commendable. And I just wish more people would do that.
Yeah, we kind of have lost the concept of not really mentoring, but I think of like 500 years ago with, you know, a blacksmith. You know, you would have a mentor and a mentee. Yeah. He would learn the skill. Now everyone just goes to college, come out of college without knowing what they're going to do, you know, or anything like that, which is real different.
Yeah. When I went to college, we had an internship available. And the internship is what gave you the real world breakthrough experience. I think there's a lot of opportunities out there. People could just invest in their local community to do just what you said. Notice people and say, "Oh, I see you have an interest in, do you know about this?" Or just spend time with them, right? Foster that interest, what little bit you can do. You don't have to be an expert in anything, but if you show interest in someone else, that will help inspire them to jump in.
Yeah. And I've kind of taken that mindset is really good. And I have applied that in the aspect of ever since 2015, I've been leading the Atlanta WordPress meetup. Now, COVID kind of, interrupted, everything where we went virtual, and now we're trying to bring that back up. But I mean, within the WordPress community, we used to, but we're trying to get it back up. Where we have every month have a meetup, and we teach people how to do stuff. That's my way of giving back, because I use a lot of open source tools that I don't have to pay for, and I want to give back in some way, form, or fashion. And one way to do it is by giving the knowledge back to people.
Love it.
So,
Love it. And speaking of knowledge, let's talk about knowledge. How much knowledge do you need to be a WordPress guru?
Not much. To be honest, and I think a lot of WordPress people would agree, because it's hard, right? Because if I'm a doctor, I have to have some kind of document saying I at least went through classes and did all this stuff. Whereas a web developer, you can say you're a web developer and not really know how to do anything in the web development world. You have a lot of people that will be like, "Yeah, my web guy, I paid him $3,000, then he couldn't complete it and he disappeared," and it's and I think a lot of it is just because people get over their heads. They don't know how to handle that stuff. I mean, probably early 2000s or so, doing freelance stuff, I wasn't the best, I wasn't great. Now we've gotten a lot better, and I would never do anything like that. But yeah, it doesn't take a lot. If you run an agency that does WordPress development, you write plugins from scratch, you need to know a lot of stuff. And I'm no longer an expert, as I have hired people that are smarter than me, because I realized, okay, I can't grow my business and continue to write code. And so hire people that are better than me. They know JavaScript, know HTML,
Well,
CSS, PHP. I
you're
mean,
talking about a whole lot of acronyms here, but what would be your advice to a small nonprofit or mid-sized nonprofit that doesn't necessarily have the huge budget available to just have top-notch everything? Now, you brought up a point where just because you say you're a web developer doesn't mean you're a web developer. So how does a organization protect themselves and hire the right outfit to do the job? What would be your advice to them to do the test of validity?
That's a good question. And it is hard, because they're looking for, if they're a nonprofit, chances are they're looking for a one-man shop that's cheap. I would say make sure that they've been around for a while. Although I try to give someone a break. You have to start somewhere, right? Generally make sure that they have an existing website, that they have example work, that they have contracts that are good contracts. Because I used to do stuff like, yeah, I can do that website for $2,000. I'll just send you an invoice for half, and that's no contract or anything like that. The contracts are really important, just because it protects the designer. It also protects the nonprofit. So I think contracts are really important, as much as no one likes to write them.
Well, so if you got somebody that's offering services that are just giving you an invoice versus what the actual scope of work is.
Right. That's a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem. Like red light, red light. Other than doing your due diligence, what's your contract, what's your terms, all those types of things, your history, show us some past performance. Do they actually get to the point like you're hiring a person to give some references? Is that something that's worthwhile?
We actually have that happen somewhat regularly, even though we're an established business. A lot of people will ask for references. That's why you always want to do good work, because people are, I mean, exactly. So you want to make sure that someone's going to say something that's really good about you at the end. Word of mouth is a big part of what we do. If we didn't have good word of mouth, we wouldn't grow the way we have, and we've grown pretty well. So we've gotten good references or given out good references, I guess. So
I can rate my professor. I can rate my food, beverage, and hospitality on Yelp. So what's the rating system for web development?
I have been trying to get, there's a thing called Trustpilot, which is a review. It's like Yelp, but not for restaurants. It's for services. And I've tried to grow my Trustpilot portfolio. And a lot of times what I'll do is that after I do something, like fix something on their website, I'll say, "Hey, can you go give me a good review on here?" And so I have a
But other than that, there's not really any formal method that a someone looking to hire somebody could look up and see?
Not really. I mean,
other maybe a Better Business Bureau. I don't know.
Do people use that now? I mean, like,
I think it's still a valid thing. I don't know what it is like for web development. It's one of those check blocks to help prevent loss of funds, right?
Right.
And chasing people and ill feelings. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it still would be applicable or not.
But yeah, Trustpilot's kind of the one that I think is, that's the only one I know for web-specific things. Glassdoor.
Is there any preference to having, if you're a continental U.S. or U.S. company looking for web development, is there any caution to going overseas and not having any control?
I haven't had a great experience going overseas regularly. I think some of it, someone comes to us and says, we need a plugin written. Winds up being where I've gotten quotes out of other countries, and it's about three times what our developers think it'll be. And so I don't know if it's a miscommunication issue or what. I haven't had a lot of luck yet in that. I'm not saying it's not possible. It just doesn't work out well for my business. So,
what is the most sought after integration on a WordPress website?
I think the number one integration that we do is probably just a contact form. We use Gravity Forms within WordPress to do that. And I say that because a lot of times people, it integrates, Gravity Forms will integrate with HubSpot, lots of different CRMs. And so that's kind of the go-to integration that everybody wants, or some other ones. But I mean, the contact form is really important. Probably secondarily is Google Maps, because on the contact page, people will want to have, you know, where their location is on there. Real simple integrations. 20 years ago, doing that was a lot of work. Now we've got tools that make it real easy to do stuff like that.
Is WordPress primarily or only for an outward-facing website, or is it something that is set up for internal communications of an organization?
I think, and this, don't quote me on this, but I'm 90% sure that like Coca-Cola uses WordPress for an intranet. I think their whole marketing team is using WordPress, because WordPress, if you know what you're doing, like a lot of developers will see WordPress and they'll say it's a stupid blogging platform where you can't really do anything. And I disagree. If you know the ins and outs of it, I see it as a starting point where I don't have to write the authentication system, you know, for people to log in. I don't have to write all these tools, and then I can just build a base and build whatever I want out of it. I know how to write plugins, or my team does. You don't want me writing plugins at this point.
Yeah, but, yeah.
You know.
What's the, I'm trying to go, is WordPress a for-profit?
It used to be a 501c3. Now it is a, I forget what the new terminology is, but it's like it's a for good. Like, I don't remember the terminology for it.
Yeah.
It's not a 501c3, but it's something like, it's not for-profit either.
So I'm looking at the website. They're still listed as a .org as far as their website. And it says they started in 2003. So they're relatively a new company on the set here.
Yeah, WordPress is only 20 years old. It actually turns 20, I think, in May of this year. So
what's been the biggest feature of WordPress to future-proof themselves? And why have they not been bought up yet by Microsoft?
I think if they were bought by Microsoft, I think the majority of the community would just shrivel up and disappear, to be honest.
Oh, you think?
Absolutely.
They'd be like, oh, you sellouts.
I mean, even though we all know that's what everyone's goal is, to make it big and sell to somebody. If that were to happen, it really would. There would be a big fork in that. But that happens with a lot of open source projects, where Oracle comes and buys MySQL, and then people are like, "Forget that! I'm forking it and starting MariaDB." You know, so like that stuff like that happens regularly. It's a little scary.
It seems to be in vogue as a corporate structure to build it up and then sell it out. They talk about something called the WordPress Foundation, and the WordPress Foundation is a 501c3, and it says here on their website that it has no full-time employees or people on salary.
That's interesting. The company that runs WordPress is called Automattic, and they do have, I'm not 100% sure how things are divvied up, but they do a thing called WordCamp. WordCamp. And I know that WordCamps, for example, I'm one of the lead organizers for WordCamp Atlanta. And we're planning doing an event in October of 2023. This year, it'll be the first time in since COVID to have a WordCamp. And we'll have about 650 people attending. It's a big event. We have those WordCamp events, those happen globally. And there's like 200 to 300, let's just say pre-COVID. Right now, I can't tell you what the numbers are. They're much lower than they used to be. Doing 200-ish events globally for WordCamps is pretty awesome. The organization does a really good job making sure that the tickets are really cheap. It can't be any more than $25 a day. So you get a t-shirt, you get a meal, and you get to sit through classes basically all day long for $25. So it's a really good deal. And then we get people like GoDaddy and Bluehost and all the hosting companies to sponsor. That's how we get the price down. There's different levels of sponsorship, gold, silver, and bronze, or whatever they label them as. And I can donate money. And I will for my event. It's just a way to give back.
Here again, you're giving back to the community that built this, right?
Yeah, it's a community. Absolutely.
So WordPress is, for the most part, an open source code kind of concept?
Yep. Yeah, it's actually a fork from Cafe Log, another blogging platform that it was real basic. And actually, I started doing a YouTube channel about a month ago. I did a video about the first version of WordPress, and it's hysterical to see how pathetic, no offense, you know, to the people, like if you compare it to WordPress is pretty amazing, all the tools you have, but you look at version, I think it starts with 0.71, it's a beta version, and it's so basic. You can blog, and that's about it. It's pretty awesome.
So what's the future?
I don't know.
Does WordPress have any holdout for creating a niche in artificial intelligence or any of the new technologies that are rolling out?
WordPress is at version 6.1.1. And at version 5, which was about 3 years ago, they released what's called Gutenberg, which is a content editing or a page builder. And that has been basically the future is JavaScript. And that's for most technologies. The amount of JavaScript developers, the need for it has skyrocketed. And WordPress has jumped on that bandwagon. So I think right now, they're trying to get Gutenberg, the page editor, where it is more user-friendly and where people are wanting to use it. There's been kind of a big rub, you know, or a divide where a lot of people don't want to use Gutenberg. In fact, someone forked WordPress, and it's called Classic Press, where it doesn't have that part of WordPress in there, the Gutenberg thing. So it's one of those things. If that's the great and bad thing about open source is that if people don't like it, they can be like, yeah, I'm going to go do my own thing, you know. But then you lose the whole community. And within WordPress, there's thousands of developers that contribute all the time. So rebuild that and have ecosystem like that is really hard to restart.
But it gives the opportunity to challenge the system. Innovation and the entrepreneurs to thumb their nose at convention and say, the heck with that. We're going to go on our own island. It's kind of unique in the sense that giving free range opportunity to the public to steer their own boat is pretty empowering.
It's a very hippie mindset in the whole open source movement kind of has that mindset.
I don't tie the concept of hippies to high tech. It's kind of funny.
Well,
and now they're the system.
Yeah. Let me tell you a quick story. There's a company called Microsoft. Ballmer, I think was his name. Steve Ballmer said, Linux is a cancer, was very anti-Linux. And Linux Source, if you guys don't know, it's an operating system similar to like the Macintosh operating system. And Microsoft was anti-Linux. Now, Microsoft makes most of its money, I think, through Azure, and it's all running Linux. So Microsoft has completely flipped where they realized open source, why not use all these thousands of people that are writing code and let's wrap that product and give it support and make money off of it. And even things like Edge, the browser that they use right now. Edge, if you look at the history of that, it's a fork from Chromium, which is Chrome's browser, which was a fork of WebKit, which was Apple's browser, which was a fork of KHTML, which is a Linux browser that came with KDE. So now we have basically a Linux open source browser that is the primary browser now for a Microsoft operating system, which is just really fascinating to me that it's kind of gone completely the other way around, where it was a cancer and now it's a great way for people to make money. it's weird, but it works for them.
The survival and adaptability of any corporate structure or organizational structure is to identify what's the best solution, regardless of the gut connection to what they thought or what. Whenever you say, we'll never do that, then you're going to kind of step on your own foot to save face sometime. It's funny because you talk about product evolution. I just saw Firestarter for somebody's lighting candles. That was a battery-operated, chargeable USB device made by Zippo Lighter Company.
Zippo.
It's like, interesting. You know, so it's just funny when you talk about evolution of product lines. Where is next is always the question.
You've got to change and adapt or you'll be replaced.
Exactly.
And that's kind of like what Microsoft saw. Like, they're trying to maintain Internet Explorer. No one liked Internet Explorer.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And I was saying for years, why don't they just take an open source browser and relabel it and boom. And they took my advice finally.
Great. I'm glad they probably sent you a healthy check for that advice.
Yeah,
too.
Of course.
Yeah, so. Sure. Yeah. Why don't you define for me what you think knowledge management is?
Knowledge management. So knowledge management would be taking information, whether it be something that you've acquired or something you've just read about, and managing or using that knowledge to either use it within your business or make money, you know, doing that. So I guess that's knowledge management.
Sounds good enough for me. It fits differently for different organizations. But think of it as an asset.
That makes sense. And that's how we make money, just because we know how to do WordPress better than someone that just picked it up. So that makes sense.
Yeah, reverse it a couple thousand years ago, like you were given your concept of the bringing somebody in and training them like the blacksmith. You know, the blacksmith can make money because they've got the skill set and the know-how and the experience. They can execute and build. Right? They can build the sword, the horseshoes, whatever that is. But the novice has no clue, no understanding until they get to that level of skill. And that's really what knowledge is building that as a skill set within the organization.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I don't give myself enough credit a lot of times when I'm trying to think of something to do for YouTube. I'm always trying to think of ideas, like what would people be interested in? And I always forget about, like, just because I don't see that skill. I think about like FTP skills that's a way to connect and upload files onto something. Someone might not know how to do that. I've been doing that since like 92, you know, and it's one of those things where I don't give myself enough credit for that piece of knowledge, because it's second nature to me.
Exactly. Easy to overlook what we do know.
Right.
It is. And that's why doing a mentorship is kind of critical, because somebody that doesn't know anything is going to ask all those pointy questions that you know, but you forgot that's that important.
Right.
Right. It's like, oh, everybody knows that. I mean, come on. That's basic stuff.
Absolutely. You know?
Thank you, Aaron. It's been a blast.
It has been. It's been fun. Thank you.
You have just finished our latest Because You Need to Know, a public service of Pioneer Knowledge Services. Please join us on LinkedIn and find us at pioneer-ks.org. Your company or organization would like to help us continue this mission and sponsor one of our shows, email bynt.k at pioneer-ks.org.